or perhaps early 80s, I had an experience where I woke up one morning and I remembered that during the night I had been aboard a UFO. I had been paralyzed, lying on some kind of a platform, like a hospital bed of sorts, and I was unable to move, and there were these alien creatures standing all around me, and they were performing medical experiments on me. I couldn't remember the specific medical experiments they had performed on me, but I remembered one of them standing on the far side of the room, and he was holding a test tube. And I remember that quite well because I kept thinking, gosh, that's a weird-looking test tube. Our test tubes are clear, and the one this alien is holding looks like pewter. You know, it looks like a silver color rather than transparent glass.
Yeah, glass, yeah.
And I remembered what the aliens looked like. They didn't have any hair. And they had huge heads, and I kept thinking, how do those heads stay on their bodies? You know, their necks are so thin, and their heads are so big. And I remembered that their eyes were just solid black and were just kind of almond-shaped, huge. They just had two little holes for a nose. I didn't remember what that mouth looked like, and I remembered that they didn't have any ears. So I remembered that much consciously the morning after it happened.
All right.
However, I did not accept that as reality because I'd never heard of that kind of thing happening to anybody else. And I, even though it seemed just as real as you and I talking right now and anything else I do in my conscious awakening life, I just had no context in which to put it. And because it happened at night, I just tried to convince myself that it was a dream.
Yeah.
However, it seemed so real to me that I had to convince myself it was a dream. And, you know, I said things to myself like, you know, Leah, that had to have been a dream because how could creatures have come into your house and gotten you out? You know, the doors and windows were locked. And then I thought, maybe somebody left one open, you know. And I physically went around and looked at every single door and window to make sure that it was locked. And then I discovered, yeah, they all were locked. So I said, okay, so that means it had to have been a dream. You know, so I just talked myself into believing that it was a dream.
Sure, which is easier in a lot of cases.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so after, and I told my husband about it. It's a different husband from the one I've got now, by the way. But I told my first husband about it, and I said, you know, what do you think about this? You know, what do you think about this dream? I said, it just seems so real. And he said, gosh, I don't know. You know, but he could tell that I was very concerned about it. But after I told him about it, I managed to put it out of my mind and didn't think about it anymore. And then in 1990... what happened was I was just visiting my parents, and my mother told me that she had just finished reading an article in the local newspaper that said that the Russian government had just admitted the existence of UFOs.
Huh.
And so we just got into a discussion about UFOs in general, and then I recalled that experience that I had that I just told you about.
Yes.
And my brother told me that he had heard of and read about other people describing experiences just like what I had described that I had called a dream. And he said he didn't think it was a dream, that there were too many other people reporting things like that.
Makes sense. Okay.
So my brother then gave me information as to about how to get in touch with Bud Hopkins, which I did. In the meantime, while I was waiting to hear back from Bud Hopkins, I started having additional experiences that involved alien beings. So in 1990 and 1991, I had a lot of alien visitations.
Mm-hmm. And you sort of coined a phrase about how you recall these experiences. They're not quite in reality, not quite dreams, are they?
Well, now, some the ones that I mentioned that happened in the early 1991, mm-hmm. you might not have read about those. Those are discussed in a book called Lost Was the Key.
Okay.
Which was the first book that I wrote about my experiences.
All right.
And in that book, most of the experiences in there are alien abductions.
Okay.
Or abductions, which we haven't gotten into this yet, but abductions by the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
But you're referring to some additional experiences that I had later on that I call virtual reality experiences.
Yes.
Right? Okay. I have had those experiences too, and virtual reality experiences, they seem like they're real at the time. But then when they're over with, you know, you're really not sure if they happened or not. They're very confusing to me. I still haven't been able to get a good grasp of what the virtual reality experiences are. Right now, at this point in time, I think that some of them could be implanted memories rather than reality as we know it.
Well, this is where you start to come to the conclusion that these encounters, these supposed alien encounters and abductions are really taking place through the military somehow.
Right. I think that some of them are. And I'll tell you why. And here's what I think happened with me. At least, I still have a lot of questions myself, even about my own history, my own case. I still have a lot of questions about it. But it appears to me that what happened was that at the very beginning, I was abducted by real aliens. Okay? And then at some point in time, our military and a covert group of scientists got interested in my case and started abducting me, too. And here's why I say that. It's because of an experience that I had that I know for a fact was a real experience and that I remember consciously. And it was this. In the mid-90s, I found myself in a line of a group of other abductees. We had been heavily drugged, and I was just barely able to determine what was going on because of the effects of the drugs. But I'm a very strong-willed person, and I kept willing myself to try to break through the effects of the drugs and see what was going on.
Okay.
And I started looking around to see if there was another abductee in the group that I recognized, and I thought that I recognized a person who was standing behind me. So I started walking toward her, and then I realized that it was not that person at all, that it was the person that I saw was much smaller and much shorter. And when I fought against the effects of the drugs enough, I saw that person looked like an alien rather than a person.
Okay.
So I started walking up toward the alien, and I got right in the alien's face. And it was one of those aliens with the big black eyes.
Your typical gray alien?
Right. Yeah, the ones that I've seen really have an off-white color. A lot of people call them grays. But the skin color, the ones I've seen, is more of an off-white rather than a gray tint.
Okay.
Anyway, so I got right up into the face of that thing that looked like an alien. But when I looked really carefully at the eyes, I could see that the eyes were really patches on a costume. And the patches, I could actually see stitching where the patches were sewn onto the fabric, and I could see the texture the weave of the fabric.
Fabric. Wow.
And so when I realized that, I thought, oh my God, you know, this is not an alien at all. This is not an alien encounter. These are human beings dressed up as aliens who have kidnapped the group of us to perform some kind of experiments on us. And if I ever let on that I have broken through the effects of the drugs and recognize this, then I'll be in serious, serious trouble. So I turned around and faced the front of the line of the other abductees and decided to just be a good little zombie so I wouldn't be found out. And at that point, the abductors started moving the line forward.
Okay.
And we were ushered into some kind of a transport device, kind of like a tram. I remembered seeing the doors slide open horizontally, and we abductees stepped aboard this transport device. And we went some distance, and then the doors on the opposite side opened, and we stepped out, and that's where my memory ends. I cannot remember anything that happened past that point. I don't know where we were. I don't know what happened to us. I don't know how I got back home. Nothing. I only remember the part that I've told you. But when that happened, that totally changed my outlook on the abduction phenomenon.
It was then that you started to think that this could be some sort of charade to hide behind.
Right, right. I realized that it's entirely possible that a lot of my earlier abduction experiences were by human beings when I had thought that they were aliens. And so now, of course, I have to wonder just how many of my experiences were alien, how many done by these humans, and what all are these humans doing?
People who are abducted by quote-unquote aliens are often really part of some deep, dark military project, and this is what she feels it's so important to get across.
You mentioned your book here in January 18th, 2002. You decided to go through a hypnotic session to recall one of your encounters, one of your experiences. And then in there you talk about being aboard a blue military airplane and being in a hotel lobby.
Right, right. I had an encounter. Here's one of my experiences that I had that researchers really can't agree on, and even I'm not sure what happened. So I'm going to tell you what I remember, okay?
All right,
here's what I remember. I remember being on a beach somewhere. It looked like Florida beaches, white sand, and a few sand dunes and sea oats scattered about. And the beach was deserted. I didn't see any buildings, any tall buildings anywhere. You know, no hotels. It was a deserted strip of beach. And what had happened was I had remembered being aboard an alien craft, and the typical alien abduction had occurred where I'd had the medical experiments done on me by these creatures with the big black eyes. And while I was aboard a craft in the air, I felt a jolt, and I fell back and hit my head on something. When I came to on the beach that I just described. I crawled out of the UFO, and after I got onto the sand, I saw a lot of military activity going on. I heard and saw helicopters overhead, and I saw a military guy who had an alien slung across his shoulder, and the military person had on a gas mask type device, and I then saw a lifeboat or a little small boat coming out from a big military ship, and these military people with white uniforms grabbed me and took me on board the small boat, and then we rowed out to the big military vessel, and they put me aboard the military vessel. Once I got on board the big military ship, I saw an alien who was lying on the deck of the ship. These two aliens that I saw were still alive. I had remembered seeing four aliens aboard the UFO. I don't know what happened to the others. But I saw those two. Although it's possible that the one I saw aboard the ship was the same one that I had seen on the sand a little bit earlier that was being carried, because the alien could have been taken by helicopter to the ship.
That's true. Well, it seems like some sort of a crash retrieval was going on there.
Right, it does. It absolutely does. It seems like a crash retrieval. When I felt a jolt, when I was aboard the UFO and I felt the jolt, you know, the question is, if that really happened, if my memory serves me correct, did our military shoot the thing down? Okay?
Or maybe they had a collision with it.
Well, that could be another possibility. But there's another reason I think that maybe our military shot it down, which I'll get to in just a minute. But so anyway, I remembered this, and then, yeah, I remember being taken back home aboard a blue airplane. Actually, I wasn't home. I was staying in a hotel when this happened. And I remember being taken back to a base aboard a blue airplane and then being put into a blue sedan and taken back to my hotel room. And two men accompanied me to my hotel room. One of them kept me out in the hall while the other one went in to do something to my husband. I assumed that it was to give him some drugs so he wouldn't wake up as I was being brought back into the room. That's what I assumed. So anyway, I have this memory of all of this occurring. Mm-hmm. But because of that experience that I had, where I saw the humans dressed up like aliens, now my question is, was this a real memory or was it an implanted memory? And there's evidence to support both conclusions, and I'm still questioning whether it really happened. I recalled some of it consciously, and I recalled some of it with the aid of hypnosis. So now, here's the evidence that supports the 50% chance that it really did happen. I went to investigate the Florida coastline to see if I could come across a location that looked like the one I remembered. And yes, I did.
All right.
Found such a location just east of Navarre Beach in Florida, which is on the southern end of Eglin Air Force Base. On Eglin Air Force Base, there's an electromagnetic pulse beam weapon that I took a photo of, and which is contained in Unlocking Alien Closets. I'm sure you saw that
yeah.
photo.
Yep.
And an electromagnetic pulse beam weapon is a device that can disable a vehicle, either on ground vehicles such as trucks and cars and buses, or vehicles in the air, such as airplanes and, I assume, UFOs. So that electromagnetic pulse beam weapon was just a short distance from the location that looked identical to the crash site that I had recalled.
Interesting. Very.
And the other evidence that points to the possibility that event really did occur is that there are records there were witnesses to other crash retrievals in that area.
Uh-huh. Did it happen recently or long ago?
Long ago. It was in about 1988 to 1990 that these retrievals were reported in the Florida area. And another bit of evidence that promotes the idea that it really could have happened is that I was able to trace back through receipts. Thank God I'm a CPA and I keep every kind of document.
Yeah, that helps.
That helped me a lot to trace back the times that I had stayed in a hotel that I could have been abducted from, and that was in August of 1988. And we do have evidence that our Joint Chiefs of Staff met down there in that area unprecedentedly during that period of time. And they were taken into a big hangar that had a vast amount of air conditioning brought in for some reason.
Okay.
And it was under extremely tight security.
All right.
Nobody knows what was going on in that hangar that the Joint Chiefs of Staff had to see.
Very curious. How did you come to this information?
The way I came from that information is by going down to that area to do research to find out all I could about crash retrievals, and some of the residents down there showed me a newspaper clipping about the Joint Chiefs meeting.
Oh, okay. There is yet another example of this curious crossover between the military and these crashes. Do you think
shoot down things of that sort? But I had a lot of helicopter flyovers myself. You know, helicopters would come over my house and hover, or just buzz, just right above the roof, and I felt as if they were going to take the roof off. During those early years, my belief was that they were just trying to scare me, trying to harass me so that I would keep my mouth shut about what was happening to me.
I've been getting information. One which you point out quite regularly in your book is from The Voice.
Right. I received telepathic communications from time to time from something that I have termed the silent voice. And the reason I call it that is because I get the messages, but I don't hear anything audible. It's kind of like a message being sent to me through the computer. You know, it's just it comes into my head all at once, just like an email comes over the internet all at once. The message comes into my head all at once, but I don't hear like a female voice or a male voice when I get these messages from what I call the silent voice. But I've been given a lot of spiritual information from that source and strengthening information from that source. One time I questioned, who is the silent voice? And I said, I want to know where these messages are coming from. And the response that I got was the Elohim. But, you know, I don't know if the silent voice is telling me the truth. I don't know if the silent voice is really the effects of mind control or what exactly it is.
Yeah. Well, the Elohim has come up in other UFO experiences through other people and other channelers as well. They seem to be in touch with a large number of people in this field.
Yeah, that's true. And that's one of the problems that I have, is determining, you know, who it really is. I have a real problem knowing for certain, because I know that the Elohim do exist. Okay, we have plenty of historical references to that. And if the Elohim can communicate telepathically 2,000 years ago, why can't they communicate telepathically now? You know, I mean, I think they can. And I think that the Elohim do communicate with people. Now, whether they're communicating with me or not, I still don't know. I still don't know. And the reason why I don't know is because I do know for a fact that human beings have been communicating with me telepathically.
Really? People around you?
Via the black helicopters.
Okay. Well, how does that work?
Okay. I'll tell you about an experience that I had in, I think it was June 2000. just about a little more than 3 years ago, a little under 4 years ago, this happened. I had awakened during the night, in the middle of the night, and I was having some kind of weird experience. I don't know if I had just returned from an alien abduction or if in my dream I was recalling an alien abduction that had occurred at an earlier point in time. At any rate, I got afraid in my sleep, and I was whimpering and moaning and trying to scream out for my husband, but I couldn't get any sound out. And I'm sure you've heard of that many times too, like in these abduction experiences, a person tries to scream, mm-hmm. and nothing comes out.
Yeah, they're paralyzed to some degree.
Right, and that's what was happening to me in this experience that I was having. I was trying to wake up my husband so he could get me out of that whatever kind of experience I was in. And all that came out of my mouth really was some whimpering. At any rate, it was enough to awaken my husband, and then he woke me up. He shook me and woke me up and got me out of what kind of experience I was in. And I told him about it. I told him everything that had happened in the experience. We talked about it for a while. And then I went back to sleep. He wasn't able to go back to sleep, though. And he went ahead and got on up and got ready to go to work. And then at 5:30 a.m., he came into the bedroom to wake me up. And he said, "Leah, you've got to get up and go to work." And I said, Okay, I'll get up in a minute. You know, I'm not a morning person. It's hard for me to get up.
Okay.
And so I just lay there for a while. And then after he came back in there and said, "Now, get on up now." And I said, "Oh, okay." And at 5:30, he left for work. He went ahead and he left. Well, I still hadn't gotten out of bed. And then I heard a helicopter. Well, it sounded like a helicopter flying overhead. And it stopped above my house. And then I heard a voice, and it was in my head too, but I could determine that it had more of a flavor of being a male voice. I somehow identified it as being male, and it was not like the silent voice at all. It was totally different. And this voice in my head was saying to me, "Stay in bed. You can't go to work today. You have a headache. You're sick." You know, was telling me that kind of thing over and over again.
Right.
You know, trying to tell me that I had a headache. And when the voice said that I had a headache, my head did start hurting. And it was trying to make me go back to sleep. And yet I consciously was aware that the helicopter or whoever was in the helicopter was conducting mind control on me and was trying to make me fall back asleep. And so I was trying to fight the effects of it with all my might. I kept telling myself, "I have to go to work. I need the money. If I don't go to work, I don't get paid. I've got to get out of bed. I've got to go to work. You know, I've got to fight the effects of whatever this helicopter is doing to me." But I was powerless. I couldn't do a thing. I could not do one single thing. And after a few minutes, then it sounded like the helicopter was flying away. And then something inside my head said, "Oh, that wasn't a helicopter at all. That was just an airplane with engine trouble." Well, at that point in time, my husband came running into the house. And he was screaming, "Leah, are you okay? Are you okay?" And he burst into the bedroom and he said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, I'm not okay. I'm not okay at all." I said, I thought this helicopter was above the roof, you know, and I thought it was trying to make me have a headache and make me sleepy and it was going to do something to me. And I said, but it wasn't a helicopter at all. It flew away, so it must have been just an airplane having engine trouble." And he said, no. I don't think I'm saying this exactly, you know, word for word as it happened. I did document at the time exactly word for word how this happened, but this is a general idea anyway. Anyway, I said, "What are you doing in the house anyway? You're supposed to have already gone to work." And he said, "Well, I did go to work." but I had eaten something I shouldn't have eaten, and I got an upset stomach, and I had to come back home. And he said, as I was pulling into the driveway, I saw a helicopter hovering above the roof of our house.
Hmm.
So,
wow.
The point is that my husband caught the helicopter doing mind control on me, trying to convince me that I had a headache and I had to stay in bed and couldn't go to work.
And
it caught them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he made an obscene gesture to it and they flew away. Hmm. And apparently their last bit of mind control was to try, you know, the voice saying, we're not a helicopter, we're an airplane with engine failure. You know, obviously now when I look back on that, I realize that it was the helicopter itself that had implanted into my head that they weren't a helicopter.
Sure,
they were an
trying to cover their tracks. Well, do you feel as though they were trying to abduct you again and this is how they do it?
Right, exactly. I am almost certain that what was going to happen there is that they were going to, you know, once they made me fall back asleep, you know, which is what they were trying to do, that they were going to land the helicopter in the pasture behind our house and take me and do whatever the heck they do to me when they have me.
There has been a lot in your book about what goes on during these abductions, and they're having to do with your reproductive processes, and you often find strange marks after these encounters, don't you?
Right, exactly. I've had all kinds of marks appear on my body, starting in about 1991. Until just a few years ago, I had marks all over my body, you know, on a very regular basis. All of kinds. Injection marks have been the most numerous. I've just noticed, you know, I had a mark on my arm or on my, you know, on my hip or somewhere that looked like somebody had given me a shot. I've also had marks on my body that looked like vaccinations. And one time I had one that was just a red triangle on my shoulder, just a solid red triangle, not just an outline, but inside too. I've had those, and I had one mark. There's a photo of this one in Unlocking Alien Closets. One mark that was a circle of punctures on my back. And that particular mark, I've been able to determine what caused it.
We're talking with Leah Haley today, who is one of those people, and you might be one of them as well, or you might know somebody who has been abducted by extraterrestrial entities. Now, that is not so far to go. What a lot of people don't realize is that they are subsequently then abducted by the military, CIA, and shadowy portions of this unseen government for further experimentation. They seem to know who's getting abducted, and then they start abducting them. They got these black helicopters that fly over people's houses and have these mind control equipment and then can alter and speak into the minds of these people that they're targeting. They perform unknown operations and experiments on them, and it's going on all over the place. I've heard these same stories from people in the UK. They've got photographic evidence. They wake up with marks on their bodies and have no explanation. They go to doctors. They can't explain it. But when you start putting the pieces together and you start being aware of what's really going on, then you're able to form a more educated opinion about what is really going on. Now, why these clandestine groups are targeting extraterrestrial abductees, we're not really sure. But the pieces are coming, and Leah Haley is right at the center of it. She knows people in the CIA are doing it. She can name names. She has direct experience, and the photographic evidence and more is in her book. And this is what we've been talking about for the past hour.
Right, yeah. My husband came across a photograph of what's called a sticky shocker. The sticky shocker is a stun gun, and it has prongs around it in a circle with little barbs on the end that can stick into your skin. What happens is, you know, you shoot this thing, you shoot it kind of like a dart gun, I suppose, and these projectiles stick in the person's skin to paralyze the person.
Yeah, these darts are connected with tiny wires to the actual gun, and that's where the electricity comes through.
Right.
Yeah, and the darts, I think, are meant to penetrate clothing and things like that, so they can get actually to the surface of the skin.
Right, exactly. And so we have a photograph of this sticky shocker in Unlocking Alien Closet. Then next to it, we have a photograph of the marks that were on my body. And it's obvious that it was one of those stun guns that made the mark on my back. You know, the size of the diameter is about the same. And so the point is that sticky shocker, it's a very human weapon. It's man-made. There's nothing whatsoever alien about it.
You feel as though they would have had to have used this on you at some point, although it seems that their methods are much more sophisticated than that.
The human beings have more sophisticated methods. That's correct. See, the problem that I have is that I don't remember who shot me with the stun gun. You know, I don't remember the circumstances. I don't know where I was, how I got there, who was there with me, how I got back home. All I know is that I awakened with, I had this mark on my body. It was on my back. It's apparent that somebody shot me in the back, but I don't know who and I don't know when. I've been able to trace it within a short range of time. I mean, I know that it happened in January or February of 1993, but I don't know exactly what day it occurred because, obviously, and here's where the real advanced technology comes in. The advanced technology, obviously, was used to erase my memory. Otherwise, you know, why don't I recall what happened prior to this being shot and what happened after I was shot? You know, somebody had to have made the attempt, the successful attempt, to erase my memory. So some kind of technology is being used to do that.
And it could be also that you've been or are being abducted by more than one group with varying levels of sophistication.
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, think about the technology involved in that helicopter incident that we were talking about. You know, what kind of technology is it that enables somebody in a helicopter to give a person a headache without physically touching them?
Well, that's true. That's it sounds like really deep, dark stuff.
Right. It's apparently this is really big, black budget stuff that's going on, and we do have evidence. Actually, we have proof that the CIA has been involved in that kind of experimentation.
Yeah, and technology.
Technology, and, right. I just recently received from the CIA under the Freedom of Information Act 3 CDs that contain approximately 20,000 pages of documents on mind control. MK Ultra and Project Artichoke experimentation. And so the CIA, in releasing these documents, has admitted to being involved in these mind control experiments.
Some of the documentation points to experimentation on unwitting citizens.
Right, which that would be me.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely have not agreed to being one of these subjects. And I have not received just compensation for it either, I might add.
No. Well, these experimentations have been going on, what, since the 50s?
Yeah, they started in the 50s, according to the documents that I've seen. And supposedly what the CIA says, that these projects stopped a couple of decades ago. However, I know for a fact, because of my own experiences, that the projects have not stopped. You know, it might be that they're being conducted by a different group, or it could be that they've gone deeper undercover. But they're definitely continuing.
And have you found that you have had encounters with people who you might think are from these black projects?
Actually, I know who some of them are. Some of the people, and I will not name names because the people that I know for a fact are involved in the projects are very unscrupulous people who would not think twice about just bumping somebody off in a split second. So I won't name their names. But what happened was, in Unlocking Alien Closets, I wrote about a guy named, that I call Bulldog. That's just the nickname I gave him. He's a person who was dressed in a military uniform. He had a whole lot of decorations on, so he obviously was a very high military official who was one of my abductors back in the early 90s. And I know who that man is. I have since run across his picture. I've come across his picture. He's deeply involved in dark mind control projects, and is even vocal about it. And when I wrote about Bulldog in my book, quite a lot of other people emailed me or phoned me or wrote me and said, is Bulldog so-and-so? The reason we want to know is because he was one of the people who kidnapped us too. So there have been quite a few people who have figured out who Bulldog is. Now, some of the people who have written me gave me a name that was different from the person I know as Bulldog. However, in every one of those cases, the people that they named who abducted them was an associate of Bulldog. So I and quite a few other people know the names of some of these human beings who are abducting victims against their will. We know who some of them are.
And do they, these are part of the some sort of CIA detachment?
I don't know if, I have not seen any indication that they are members of the CIA right now. The one thing that I do know is that the kinds of experiments that they're conducting have to cost an enormous amount of money. I mean, just to have the black helicopters come over and circle around as many times as they come around my place would have to be expensive. Fuel's not cheap anymore.
No.
So that would take a lot. So there has to be something, I believe, extremely sinister going on behind the scenes of what I've been able to see to accommodate that kind of funding. I don't know where this group's funding comes from. I know one source that it comes from, but I just don't believe that that one source has deep enough pockets.
What source would that be?
That's a private individual.
Oh, I see.
So I can't that person.
Yeah, no. Do you feel as though the military have been threatening? You said they have a very threatening way about them. Have you known them to get rid of people that have had these experiences?
Let me put it this way. I know of a lot of people who have been gotten rid of, who have died in mysterious ways, but I don't know who did it. For example, my best friend Carla Turner, also an abductee and an abduction researcher, you know, she died when she was in her 40s of a quick-acting cancer. And involved in her case, I mean, there in her last year of life, she had a strange mark to appear on her body, and I question where that mark came from and what was the purpose of it. And I have to wonder if one of these human groups gave her the cancer to shut her up, you know. I do believe that can be done. There's research to indicate that cancer can be given to individuals. There have been quite a lot of other people who have died mysteriously at early ages. Jim Keith is one of them. He wrote books about mind control. In fact, I just finished reading a book that he wrote called Mass Control, and it's about this highly evolved technology that the CIA and other groups have used to conduct mind control experiments on people. And in the book, Jim Keith named names, and he has it very well documented. It's not just stories that he's heard, but he has the places that you can go to find out that he's telling the truth. You know, he has the sources. He has the references there. Well, Jim had to go into the hospital for something just really trivial, like an injured knee or something like that, and died.
That is odd. Was he an old man?
Oh, no. He was young. I don't know exactly how old he was, but he was very young. And also his publisher died mysteriously too, Ron Bonds of Illuminate Press. Who died of a young age. I think it's because Ron was publishing books such as this subject that we're talking about.
Do you feel as though the military are somehow working with these aliens? How else would they know who's getting picked up?
See, I don't know the answer to that question for a fact. I can only speculate. And I just think that our military has the type of a radar that would pick up these craft. That's what I think. But then I don't know. There's plenty of evidence, though, that some members of our military are working alongside alien beings. And in Lost with the Key, I described an encounter that I had where military people in green fatigues were working alongside a little alien creature. This encounter took place in a camouflaged hillside facility. I remembered being taken to a place that just looked like a regular hillside, you know. But then when we got right up on it, the camouflage doors slid open, and we went inside, and there we were inside like a mountain. And there was a little alien there. And there have been plenty of other reports from abductees who have seen military and alien beings in the same location at the same time working side by side. And I've discovered that the mind controllers use symbols in their brainwashing techniques. And I've remembered being in a facility one time where I was strapped into a chair and I had bright white light, shining into my eyes. There would be a bright light and then a symbol, a bright light and a symbol and a bright light and a symbol over and over and over again. And the goal of that was to erase my memory so that the abductors could implant new memories into my head. Bulldog, in fact, was the person who was in charge of this brainwashing that was going on to me. And so, now I think that maybe the symbols were some of the symbols that were used in my brainwashing. But, so, I've had a hard time dealing with my own experiences because with the human factor being involved in my case, it becomes quite complex and complicated.
Had an occasion where a metallic object was left behind inside your body, and there's a photo of it right in your book here. That's it was located in your mouth, in your gums. Is that right?
Right. That's correct. In 1991, this little tiny object just worked its way out of my lower gum. It was behind my lower front tooth, and I kept feeling something just sticking out of my gum, and I kept raking my tongue across it, over and over again, until finally I dislodged it with my tongue and brought it out and put it in my hand, and I was just staring at it, this thing in the palm of my hand, and my husband walked in, and I held my hand out to him, and I said, "What is this thing?" And he said, "Well, it looks like a computer chip. Where'd you get it?" And I said, "Out of my mouth." And so we had it analyzed, and the analysis said that it was just pretty much had the properties of common brass. Yeah, so now I found out that silicon is a conductor, transmitter, conductor, receiver. So I don't know if there was enough silicon in it to act as a recording device or not. I don't know, but I have recently determined that silicon is one of the things used in implants. So apparently that object was an implant of some kind. I have no memory of who put it in my gum. I have no idea how long it had been there. I have no idea what it was doing there. Every once in a while, I get a message from the silent voice. It's not as frequent as it was a long time ago. I did get it in Laughlin, though, and the silent voice said, "No, go listen to Daniel Sheehan's lecture." And it just kept on. Three times, the silent voice said, "Go listen to Daniel Sheehan's lecture." And I knew from experience that it wasn't going to leave me alone until I did.
Yeah.
So I did. So
I went and
I listened to Daniel Sheehan's lecture, which was a very important lecture. And once I got in there, I knew why the silent voice had told me to go.
Why is that? What sort of information was imparted?
Well, he was talking about what has to be done to help educate the world about the phenomenon, and he talked a lot about the Earth changes. As leaders in the field, we have an obligation to educate the public about these. And since I've been given messages of this sort, that means that it's my responsibility to talk about them.
So this sort of helped to reinforce what you probably already suspected, that you've been somehow given this responsibility.
Right.
To go out and get this word out and get these messages out.
Right, and that's why I'm doing it. I'm certainly not receiving any benefit from it on a personal level at all, you know. I mean, you know how it is now. I mean, we're doing this radio show, but, you know, there's not any compensation. We're just, there's not any personal benefit whatsoever. I just feel like it's my obligation as a human being to share with others what I've been told.
Yeah, because...
Even if I don't understand it myself, and right. I know that I've mentioned many times on this program even that I don't completely understand it all myself, even though I've gone through it.
Yeah, it's something that we're all waking up to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and since none of us have the answers, the only way we can get them is to share the information that we do have and try to put the pieces together.
Yeah, some of them have been really terrifying, and a lot of them have been sexual in nature. Do you feel as though you've been somehow used, like some other people have claimed that they've been used by these dark agencies for some sort of strange sexual sort of slaves?
Yes, I do. And this is one of the things that has been very, very difficult for me to face, very difficult for me to admit. In fact, it is my current husband who came across the knowledge first that quite a few mind control subjects had also been used as sex slaves, and he told me, he said, I think that you have been too, because of so many of the symptoms that I've had and so many of the things that I reported. And I kept on saying, no, I haven't. And I just didn't want to admit it because it was a very difficult thing for me to do. But then when I would try to stand back and look at the situation objectively, And I had to admit that he was right. And because of so many things that I had documented in the past that I couldn't explain. For instance, back in 1980-81, I was in the hospital for 3 days undergoing a whole bunch of tests because I was having female problems that I couldn't explain, and that my doctors couldn't explain, and you know, it was like I was so sore, like I had been abused, but consciously, to my knowledge, I hadn't been. The same thing happened in the early 90s. You know, I felt like I had been gang raped repeatedly over and over and over and over again. I had no memory of it, but the symptoms were there. And I went to the doctor, my gynecologist, like 7 times, and he gave me every medicine that he could think of to try to help me. And he just was extremely, extremely baffled over what was going on, what had happened to me. He couldn't pinpoint what was wrong. Mm-hmm. With me. And then there was another thing that I did not write about in Unlocking Alien Closets that I just remembered recently, and it was this. In the late 80s, my first husband insisted that I go to the doctor to find out what was wrong with me because I had bruises that were just showing up all over me. You know, there were bruises that looked like fingerprints all on my upper arms and on my thighs and around my legs. And I had not remembered hurting myself in any way. And, you know, we knew that there was something strange going on there. And so I couldn't account for all of those bruises. And then... I've also had memories. I've had memories, little bits and pieces, just flashes here and there, of being involved in these sexual encounters with people I don't know.
Or people who you perhaps thought you recognized and then turned out not to be?
Right. There was one situation where I was in an unknown location, a location I was not familiar with, and I was very heavily drugged and forced to have sex with a guy that I thought was on a soap opera that I used to watch. And there were people in another room. I felt we were being watched by people in another room. And I realized later that this was a screen memory and that some individuals had implanted in my head, the screen memory being that of the soap opera star. When the screen fell off and I was able to break through the effects of the drug and break through the screen memory, I remembered what the individual really, really looked like. And if I were to see him today, I could identify him. I could point him out if I were to see him. And the individual really looks nothing like the character on that soap opera. But this is a typical mind control technique that the mind controllers use, and that is that of a screen memory to make you think that you're seeing a celebrity, or in many cases it's a high political official. Like there are some individuals who have reported having these encounters with presidents and like Bob Hope and prime ministers and people of that stature. And I wonder if these individuals really were involved with the characters that they remembered, or if those characters like Bob Hope and the president and all those were really screen memories for other people.
Yeah. In which case, it could be said that you were a bit more fortunate to get the soap opera
right
guy rather than a president or a politician.
Right, that's true.
In your book, you talked about an infection that you developed, and I think it was your gynecologist that was trying to give you some sort of medication for it. But the silent voice, you and the silent voice had a bit of exchange, and he was directing you how to get help for it, and said that it could heal you.
Right. That was something that I thought was an extremely strange experience. It was during the period of time that I was going to the gynecologist over and over again. We were trying 7 different kinds of medicines to try to get rid of this infection, what my gynecologist thought was an infection, that it turned out not to be an infection. It turned out to be just irritation, probably caused by these experiences that we've just discussed. Because the bacteria, I was tested for an infection, and the test came back negative. So, but at that point in time, since the gynecologist couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, he said that he was going to have to do exploratory surgery. So one night, while I was thinking about how I didn't want to have to go through exploratory surgery to find out what was causing these problems in my female area, the silent voice said to me to go into another room where I wasn't alone. When the silent voice first spoke to me, I was in bed with my husband, and my husband was asleep, and he was snoring quite loudly, so it was distracting. And the silent voice told me to go into another room. So I went into the other room where it was quiet, and then the silent voice said, don't get surgery. Don't worry, we will heal you. You know, we'll make you well. And sure enough, the very next day, I started feeling better. And within a few days' time, within a short period of time, at any rate, my symptoms all went away. I had been sick for months, and yet after the silent voice told me that they would heal me, I got well extremely quickly.
Yeah.
So my question was, who was the silent voice that time? You know, was that some kind of a spiritual healing, which is possibility number one, Or, possibility number two, if I had been abused sexually by these sex slave operatives, you know, if they just left me alone for a while and didn't abuse me anymore, did I just get well on my own?
That's a possibility.
So those are the questions I have, and I don't have the answers.
Yeah. Are these experiences still happening to you?
I haven't recalled anything along these lines happening to me recently. I do still have some weird things happen, like within the last couple of weeks, for instance, the black helicopters have buzzed my house 3 times.
Uh-huh. And you have pictures of them in your book, too. Do you run out and take pictures of them when you find them?
I do now. And out of the last 3 times that they came over,
yeah,
I got photos twice.
Okay.
The first time I didn't because I wasn't able to. I was involved in something and I couldn't find my camera. I couldn't find my camera right away. So
yeah,
when I went outside that time without the camera, it flew away and I didn't get a picture. But the last 2 times I did.
And do they hover? Do they fly by?
Yeah, a variety of things. Sometimes they just go over my house real, real, real slowly. Sometimes they hover. Sometimes they circle.
Do you live near a military base?
No. I do not live near a military base right now. I did back in the early 90s. I lived within 2 miles of Columbus Air Force Base in Columbus, Mississippi. But right now I live in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and we do not have a base in Murfreesboro.
Huh.
I don't know where the closest one is. You know, that's something that I need to research and find out where the closest one is. I know there's a big one in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, which by air that wouldn't really be that far.
Yeah.
But
still strange, though, that they would there'd be this unusual activity in with these unmarked helicopters around your house.
Right over my house. And
yeah,
this is another thing, too, is I've asked all of my friends here in Murfreesboro if the black helicopters come over their houses, and 100% of them have said no.
And it is all very clearly explained in your book, Unlocking Alien Closets. Where can people go if they want to get a copy of this book?
Well, they can get it from greenleafpublications.com, or I don't know if they'd like to make a phone call or not, but they could call 615-896-1549, or they can get it from pretty much all of the online bookstores. They can get it from their local bookstores, too, and if the local bookstore doesn't have it, the local bookstore can order it. If they tell you they can't, that just means that they really don't want to go to the trouble because they can.